everybody, and welcome to the Transportation and Logistics Podcast, powered by Atlanta Dispatch and Humblebee Enterprises. Very excited to be here with a special guest who I am trying to get up to the stage. I'm not sure if this is you. Julie, it's not showing that you are in here. It just says Jory's guest. So I don't know if that's you. So how about this? If you could exit, like close out of Clubhouse, if this is you, and re-click that link that I sent you. And I can, let me send it one more time just to make sure. But in the meantime, very excited to be here. I have some familiar faces in the room. One has known me my whole life. Hey, Sean, aka Hey Ma. What's up, Adrian? I pray everything is well your way, brother. And I'm not sure why Miss Julie is not able to join me on stage just yet.
Jory, I can hear you. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Miss Julie. But I appreciate y'all for working with me. I'm just waiting for this link to go through. And then we'll get started. Ah, there is Julie. We're going to run this bad boy back. All right. So welcome to the Transportation and Logistics Podcast, powered by Atlanta Dispatch and Humblebee Enterprises. Very excited to be here with a special guest. We have Julie Massey, who is the VP of Sales and Marketing for G2 Reverse Logistics. And before we begin, I did want to just say that the Dispatcher's Guide to the Galaxy is available now as an ebook and a physical book. You can acquire your copy online from barnesandnobles.com or Amazon. And if you're into the ebook space, you can get that bad boy from Apple Books. Miss Julie, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, Jory. It's good to be here, and I appreciate you having me come on and talk with you. Excited to be here.
Oh, definitely, definitely. How has Q1 been for you so far?
It has been super busy. I joined the G2 team in mid-November, so was heading right into Thanksgiving. And then, of course, you know, December is full of holidays as well and into the new year. And I've started off Q1 with a bang, to say the least, but it has been busy in all of the best ways. So there's no shortage of things to get done, but it's a really fun and exciting challenge.
Awesome. Awesome. I hope to dive in a little bit more to learn all the things that you've been doing so far. But look, for those who have not had the opportunity to encounter you in the past, can you please give us a brief introduction?
Sure. So I have a bit of an interesting background that I know you and I have kind of discussed the trajectory of my career in the past. It's not the most straightforward path, but I spent several years, nearly a decade after college, in the healthcare space, everything from working at a very small startup selling capital equipment, went from there to sell pharmaceuticals, and from there to sell medical devices in the OR. And after nearly a decade in that space, I was a little bored with it, wanted to do something new. And I lived in Atlanta at the time and really was interested in finding a startup with a team that was building something cool and different. I wasn't sure what industry. I kind of wanted to be in the tech space. And after a lot of research, I stumbled upon a company called Stored. It was a tech-enabled 3PL that's a pretty large company these days, but at the time was less than 30 people. And I started reaching out and engaging with their team and ultimately ended up going there. And that was my first foray into the supply chain logistics space. And that was in 2020. So I have not been here long, but I think that year, you know, before 2020, a common person who wasn't in the space didn't know much about supply chain logistics. you know, it wasn't a dinner conversation. And then when the world kind of came to a halt with the pandemic, everyone was talking about it. So it was a really exciting time to get into this space. And I always joke around that I've only really been in this space for coming on 4 years now, but it feels like a lifetime, just the amount of learning that I've had in that time. So since coming into the supply chain logistics space, I have worked for a couple of different 3PLs and most recently came on board with the G2 team to help them take their product to market, which is a reverse logistics and returns management end-to-end solution. So that's the really quick background of how I got to where I am today.
Okay. Yeah, I love it. I mean, it doesn't hurt to start your career with an organization that would eventually go to become a unicorn.
Right.
So big shout out to Sean and the rest of the team, just by way of them being based out of Atlanta and that brother graduating from Georgia Tech. I definitely have kept an eye on what they have going on. So that is pretty cool. And I didn't know you got there that early, you know, first 30 employees. That must have given you the playbook on how to scale a company. Would you say that? Like, at least how to brace yourself for a scaling company?
I'd say definitely bracing yourself for learning, drinking through a fire hose, but being surrounded by really smart people. There were no shortage of really smart people that I had the privilege to work alongside every single day, and a tremendous learning opportunity working with that team.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I can believe it. And yeah, they're still growing. I think what is the slogan? Port to porch. It's something like that. It's something like that. But again, big shout out to them. And you said you work for another 3PL. Do you see yourself in logistics for the long haul? And I'm asking that because most people I know and most people who have joined me here on this stage, they didn't go to school to be in logistics or the supply chain. They found their way there and they kind of fell in love with it. So do you feel like that's similar right here?
I have to tell you, it's a love-hate relationship, and I'll explain what I mean. Anyone who's worked in this space could probably appreciate that comment. It's a tough space, and that's part of the draw, I think, is people who like a challenge. There are no shortages of challenges on the day-to-day, depending on, you know, it doesn't matter which side you're on. If you're in the tech side, if you're in the operational side of it, if you're a 3PL, if you're a broker, if you're anywhere in that transportation side of things, there's always the constant that there's a problem you have to solve, but that's also the opportunity, as there are so many problems to solve. So I think that's what's so exciting about it, is it's something new every single day. And so I guess to answer your question, I have always been a big believer in putting myself in surrounding myself with really smart people. And this space just keeps keeping more smart people for me to go and learn from, and more challenges to try and solve. So for the foreseeable future, I don't see myself leaving this space.
Right. And look, how much of what you do is based off of relational currency? And I say that, and let me preface it a little bit. From my experience, working for an organization that had about 700 trucks, and me always having to reach out to brokers to get freight, and then me even opening a dispatch company, I've learned that everything in the supply chain is based off of a relationship. Whether it's a spot transaction or it's a spot load, it's very transactional because y'all didn't have the relationship. But things can get very, very involved, connected.
Right.
So thinking about you, how much of what you actually do is based off of some of that relational currency?
I won't say all of it, but I will say a lot of it, right? I think that the other interesting thing about the space, specifically in the side that I've been involved in, and I'm sure you can relate to this in your business as well, is relationships are everything. And when you look at the people that you are touching every day, people are putting a lot of trust in you. And this is especially true on the trucking side and on the 3PL side. You have their money in your warehouse. They have to trust you. And so, if you can establish that baseline trust, it helps a ton when you have someone who is recommending you or referring you, or, I know someone who does business with you, therefore I want to get engaged with you from that, relational introduction, it does go a long way, because it is a really hard, I'm not saying it's not impossible, and there haven't been opportunities in the past where for different of different areas. I've sold things based on going and building that relationship over time. But I do think this space is very connected. It's a very big industry, but sometimes it feels really small and everyone does know everyone, which can be a blessing if you are able to leverage that.
Right, right, right. And look, the name of this session is Getting to It with G2 Reverse Logistics. What is reverse logistics for people who have never been exposed to it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that we've, as a team, have been tasking ourselves. You know, I'll get into this a bit later. We have a very experienced team, and they have, this is a problem they've been working to solve for decades at this point. So they're very close to it. But we do have a lot of conversations internally all the time, reminding ourselves, you know, we have to be able to explain this to someone who doesn't know what it means, because it's not as common to everyone as it is to us. And so in the most simplistic terms, as a consumer, if you go to a store or you go online and purchase an item, and for whatever reason that item needs to be returned, that is what starts reverse logistics. So it's the process of getting that product from the end consumer back to whatever channel it needs to go to. And it can get very complicated from there. So it can be, you know, there's a lot of dispositions. It can be go back to that retailer for restocking and reselling. Maybe it needs some extra value added service in between when it goes from that consumer back to that forward channel. Maybe it's going to get taken out of the forward channel altogether because if it's defective, as an example, or if it is broken, damaged, needs to be recycled or repaired. So there are a lot of different dispositions it can get into, but in the most simplistic terms, it's everything that falls within that process of from when a consumer purchases a product and then wants to send it back, that really encompasses the reverse logistics cycle.
I think that's a great explanation. And like you said, there are so many different places you can take it. I guess for your specific company and maybe even some of the service offerings you have, is there a specific niche, like a type of customer that you guys support first, like a priority? Sure. Or do you guys handle it all in stride as it comes?
So there, I'll answer that in two ways. So my initial response is we do have a kind of a core ICP or an ideal customer profile where we know we have the most value to add to that customer. And that is typically going to be a consumer electronics OEM or retailer who has a higher value product. And we use consumer electronics as the example because they are typically higher priced. They have a plug or a battery, and there's a lot of things that can go into the repair phase where we can step in and really impact and drive down the cost of what goes into returning that product to maximize the recovery that you get. So that's not the only type of customer we can service. We can service retailers, but when you look at soft lines versus hard lines, and hard lines, soft lines, an example of that would be like clothing. There are efficiencies we can offer through one of our platforms to those types of customers, but where we're going to see the most value and where we can really have an extreme impact on that entire cycle is going to be those higher priced items. And if there's an extra layer there that says a lot of these products, when they get returned, have some kind of repair refurbished layer, then we are just adding on the additional value we can bring back to that company.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just peripherally hearing about things in reverse logistics, not being someone who's dealing with it every single day, but you know, you hear about the fast fashion and how it becomes a challenge to get that stuff back to the retailer if there's an issue. What type of service offerings can actually make that easier?
Yeah, and I'll take this even a step back from the question you ask and talk about the business problem of returns. And this maybe doesn't answer your question as directly, but it's kind of going to expand on the real business problem as a global economy, what that looks like. So just some quick stats for you. In 2023, there were $743 billion in returns, and that's the product value, $743 billion. So it's really close to $1 trillion. That's how big this problem is right now. And so if you kind of start to dissect that a little bit, if we say, just for an example, an average value of the return is $100, that means there's 7 billion items that are returned. Now, not to get off track here, but we know there's a lot of products, and especially when you give your example of fast fashion, that are less than $100, that exponentially expands how big that number is and how big that problem is, right? If it's $7 billion at $100, then you can do the math there and double that down to $50 and $25, what that impact is. But anyway, to continue with the example, if the average cost associated with that return is $30, and that's $210 billion in cost just associated with the return. And so what we're setting out to do is implement through our technology controls and process changes to obtain 20% improvement on the costs across the returns ecosystem. And then in addition to that, we have a re-commerce platform that we think we can enable a 5% improvement on the recovery value across that entire ecosystem. So if you take those numbers and using that $743 billion number from the original starting point of the returns that were returned in 2023, we think we can improve the economy by $57 billion, which is not a small number. So I think we can dive into that a bit further, but where we start at is, what is the problem we're trying to solve? It's trying to help alleviate the problem that is stemming from how big this problem is globally, and being able to look at it from the aspect of, how do we maximize the net recovery? And if you take it a step back, you know, traditionally, the only place you could start to impact that number was once it was received. It was a problem to be solved within the four walls of the warehouse. But what we have enabled is, from the point of returns initiation, being able to leverage artificial intelligence, machine learning, and prescriptive analytics to help you understand all the dynamics that are going to go into that return from the very first step, so that you know how to appropriately route it. So, for example, if you have a laptop, as an example, based on your historic data, based on real-time, two-day market dynamics, and also the cost that goes into each step of that, we can tell you from that first phase where to send that product based on what we know that outcome is going to be, with a 93% or higher accuracy rate. So I'll pause there. I know that's a lot I threw out there. We can break that down further, but that's kind of the quick answer to your question there.
No, I appreciate it. Again, because without having somebody who is actually in the industry, I wouldn't know any of these numbers. And I'm happy that I'm getting exposed to it right now by way of this conversation. And you mentioned the software side of things, the technology, the value adds from automation, artificial intelligence. How easy is that to get onboarded? You know, if an organization wanted to say, you know what, I have this huge sustainability initiative, and I'm looking to not only reduce the cost to get these products back, but I also want to make sure that they don't end up in a landfill. How easy is it to implement some of these solutions you guys have?
Yeah, so I think what really drew me into this team, you know, they're experts in the space. They're really credited with starting their first company many, many, many years ago and creating really reverse logistics as it's known today, and building the first software for that. But they built our technology in a way that it can be used in part or in whole. So it's modularly built, so you can add, you know, we have three different platforms. You can take one or all three of those, and you can layer it with your current technology and make it smarter. So if you're currently using a returns management system, you don't have to replace it with our returns management system. We do have one, but we can layer on top of that with our predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics platform to help you understand how to route that product from that first initiation process. So it depends on the customer, and I hate giving this answer, but the implementation is really straightforward. Everything is API driven, and so it is not this bear of a thing to get up and running. It's really depending upon the customer and which platform or platforms they are going to be integrating and what their current system setup looks like. That dictates the timeline, but it's certainly not something that's a, you know, 3, 6, 9, 18-month project or anything like that.
All right, right, right. And you hinted at something about the origins of G2 Reverse Logistics. You said that the founder is someone who is very knowledgeable, maybe even one of the forefathers, the godfathers of reverse logistics. Let's talk about the origins of G2 and maybe even the lineage. Does that make your job easier to help them grow this second company, the second coming G2?
I hope so. I think I'm still early on in that journey here. But what I will say is, I feel incredibly lucky every single day to get to work with people who are so smart, who do work so well together, who know each other really well, who treat each other really well. And the fact that they do have that credibility, you know, it is nice when you're with a startup, and there's a difference being with a startup when you're having to build that credibility versus having a startup where, yes, we're a startup in terms of what we've built this time, but having the credibility of that team who's done it before, who has the market recognition and who has proven themselves with, you know, on the largest scale that you can prove yourself, it doesn't hurt.
I hear that. So that it makes it easier, I'd imagine, because let's just say it like this. As someone who learned the game working for an industrial supplier that was if somebody was building something or they regularly handle widgets and fasteners, they know the company I was working for, Fastenal.
Right.
You know, but going from such a huge brand to me starting my own.
Yeah.
The struggle, the grit, the clawing I had to do, the 16-hour days to just be associated with something that could provide value. I mean, it was fun to do, and I'm happy that I went through the process, but it has to be nice knowing that the merit is already there when you are the sales and marketing vice president, you know?
Yeah, so for sure.
I'm happy that you were able to find that perfect combination of, you know, they have the means to do it, they have the wherewithal, and they have the reputation. So that's pretty dope. But you said something about startup, you know, right. And when I hear startup, the buzzword for startup over the last 3-4 years has been scrappy culture. Do you feel like that's what it is over there?
I do. We are very much scrappy. And I want to use that word appropriately, right? We are good stewards of our capital. I'll say that. We have a team who pays attention to what we're spending and how we're spending. And I definitely have to answer to my budget and my results, just like you would expect of any marketing or sales leader. So I'd say I get up every day and I feel like I am in this scrappy environment. I don't feel the overwhelm of that you might feel in a startup where you don't have any resources at all. So I don't want to give the wrong impression there, but we are very much good stewards of our capital. And we do try and still act as that startup and be as scrappy as possible. So I think there's definitely elements of that that come into play.
Nice, nice, nice. Do you have any major marketing objectives going on right now? Anything that you're putting a lot of your time and attention into?
Of course. So there are a couple of channels this year that we are actively working through and working on. One is events. So there are several events that we are either, we've just come out of one, we went to CES, we will be at Manifest.
Ooh, I hear that's a fun event.
I've heard the same. So if anyone listening is going to attend, please reach out. I'd love to connect while we're there. And then we'll be at Shop Talk in March. So I'm spending a lot of my time in Vegas right now, which might be fun for some people, but honestly, it's a lot, but it's all good. So events is one area where I'm spending a lot of time, and then really nailing down our messaging. I think going back to the team, we have such a smart team. They've been together for so many years. But sometimes you can be too close to your message. So I'm coming in and trying to refine that message and trying to get into as many conversations as I can, which does take a lot of my time jumping around from calls to call, just listening in, trying to gauge how our message is landing, understanding where we need to adjust and making sure that we have a message that is digestible, that's deliverable by everyone on our team, and that we are really being cohesive in how we're taking this product or our products, I should say, there's more than one, to the market and how we're talking about it. So for me right now, that's a lot of my time is just trying to make sure that we're appropriately managing pre-show expectations, be present at the shows or events and post-show what our follow-ups look like while managing also this aspect of making sure we're really nailing, refining and constantly iterating on our message to get it to a point where we know it's hitting every single time.
With your customers, right? Is it always the manufacturer or the retailer, the person that's making the item that is your customer, or are there times where warehouses, are the people that you can market to? Is that something that
that's a great question? It is. So we have customers who are 3PLs. We have customers who are the manufacturer, the OEM, the brand. That word, there's a lot of words there that are used interchangeably, and also retailers. So we work with all three of those different customer types.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, I mean, I know you used to live here, but you might as well come back to Atlanta for Modex.
I know. It's coming up. It's coming up really soon.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, when I went there 2022, it was my first time. I was blown away. It was so much. It was gigantic. The way in which they filled out the Georgia Congress building, it was crazy. I was blown away how many different vendors there were, how many warehouse providers, how many robotics providers, all these right. people that were doing pretty cool things. And I think I went two or three days just to make sure that I was able to really take it in. But yeah, I just brought that up just to see if some of those individuals who are going to be going there to get some more gadgets and gadgets for their warehouses would like to see you guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to look into that one. And would love to chat offline about your experience there as well. We are certainly not done building out our event calendar for this year. So definitely one to check out.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Of all the ones you said, I know they're going to be great. I know they are. As a small business owner, the reason why I really wanted to go to this conference is because it was free. It was 100% free. And nice. you just sign up. You go to Modex website, just sign up, walk in, and have a blast. The whole point is you just need to have a plan because it's so massive that, you can get lost. So we can definitely offline about that. But if you do come back to Atlanta, yeah, we should probably get together because I'm definitely going to be there.
Definitely. Yeah, that's okay. One I need to look into for sure. And I lived in Atlanta for a long time. I miss it dearly. So I like to find, excuses to go back every now and then.
No, I feel it. All right. So look, where you guys are, I know that we kind of talked about this. The role you had at one of your previous organizations was you were over strategic partnerships. You were able to see synergies and you were able to put people together to make sure that the magic could happen. When it comes to a startup, how important are those relationships? When do you start building those partnerships? Is there a right time? Like, how do you approach that?
This is a great question. I love this question, and I am very passionate about partnerships. And I think I'm going to define this better. It does depend on the company, but I am a really big believer in there is a certain point that you need to get to as an organization before you start going out and building what I would call strategic partnerships. And the reason that I'm very adamant about that is because I think to really enable strong partnerships, you have to come to the table with a different mindset than sales. You have to come to the table with this vision of driving mutual benefit for both companies and understanding how you can help the other person. And a lot of times when you're in the early stages of growth, you are so focused on lead generation, and you're not able to give back to that other company in the same way. And that's often what they're looking for too. There are some outliers, agencies and other relationships where there is an incentive of a monetary gain, some kind of revenue share that might be what they're looking for. But 9 times out of 10, these relationships, these strategic relationships, the way you drive value is by having that really solid value proposition, how you're mutually driving value for each other. And a lot of times that looks like, what customers do you have that I want and what customers do I have that you want, and how can we enable each other together to go to market and make 1 and 1 3. So I think for me, it's definitely top of mind. We have really big plans in the future for building out that ecosystem. But for right now, it would be a disservice for us to start chasing that before we have some of the foundational things. And I talked earlier about messaging and really making sure we nail that. I think you have to get really solid on your own kind of value proposition to the market and make sure you're servicing your customers well and you have a solid process down before you can take that and start working with partners in a way that I think is going to be valuable.
Right. I hear you 100%. Just generally speaking, now we're just talking about the industry and some of the stuff that's going on. You know, is there any disruptions that you're seeing in your business due to all the stuff that's going on in the Red Sea with, you know, the different vessels being attacked and all that and everybody having to reroute around to other places? Have you seen any impacts? Does that even affect you guys at all?
So I'm sure that it does impact some of our customers. I'm so removed from that side of it at this point that I haven't personally heard anything. I am certain my friends on the 3PL side are hearing all kinds of things. As you know, that it's kind of a chain reaction. Once one thing is delayed, it has an impact across the board, and then it can kind of turn into chaos. So on our side, we haven't heard that. A lot of the products that we're getting, of course, are coming from the market here. And so it's a little bit of a different scenario when it comes to that.
Yeah. Do you guys deal with ocean shipping at all? Like, you know, containers and all that, or is it more domestic?
So ours is more domestic. And also just to take it one step further and clarify, we are really focused on the software side of things and not operating. So we are enabling other operators with our technology. So we're a little bit removed from the actual product itself and housing it. Whereas on the 3PL side, you get really impacted by that, as you know, because you have that product and you're shipping it from one to the other, you're receiving it from the container side of things. So we are a little bit shielded from that in our current state.
Okay. Is there anything that we have not had a chance to cover? Do you have any announcements or any updates that you like to talk about or anything that we haven't had a chance to cover?
I don't think so. I think you covered most of it. Just really excited to be part of this team and to see where we are, you know, 6, 12, 18 months from now. It's really early stages for me joining this team, but I've never been more excited about a product and seeing the value that we've brought to our customers. You know, we have some customers who we've saved millions of dollars just by helping enable their process by leveraging the data analytics and the machine learning to appropriately route from step one. And so I know that we are going to have some really strong stories to tell. So we're just really excited to continue to grow out our product and our messaging and really get it out to the market.
I hear you, man. Well, thank you so much. How can people learn more about G2 Reverse Logistics or maybe even reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn, Julie Massey, and also we do have a G2 Reverse Logistics LinkedIn page. And if anyone wants to reach me directly, my email is my first name, julie.massey, M-A-S-S-E-Y, at g2rl.com. Always love to connect with others in the industry. And certainly if anyone is interested in becoming a customer or learning more, would love to chat.
Nice. Any closing remarks?
No, just really appreciate the time. It's always good to connect with you. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat with you.
Yes, ma'am. Well, look, as we close, I want to give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Ty Software, who is helping brokerages of all sizes streamline their processes and scale their businesses. So whether you're a broker specializing in full truckload or LTL, they have a solution for you and tell them that Jory sent you. Well, look, everybody, thank you so much for joining us, always supporting us. We've been doing this bad boy for about 3 years now, and very grateful for the people who have tuned in consistently and always have shared our content, and now having sponsors and all that kind of good stuff is great. So I would say tune in next week for another session. Actually, I think we have two next week in addition to partnering up with FreightWave Sonar team to talk about where you should position your trucks to take advantage of the marketplace. But yeah, again, I appreciate you, Julie, and you be blessed. And everybody, thank you.